The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
You live here. He lives here.
Good morning, Chris. Great show as usual.
I think you're a wonderful combination of information, humor, and faith. I just really appreciate you being on the air.
Hey, Chris. Good morning. I love you. You're awesome.
You have this notion that somehow if you're poor, you cannot do it. Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris Stegall on Philadelphia's AM 980, The Answer.
Sorry, folks, coming. Having an headphone problem here. A little past 6 o'clock, middle of the week. Telephone number 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. I was just watching before the top of the hour news, Fox News, just before Fox and Friends started. Jillian Mealy, woman from Philadelphia, as a matter of fact, if you don't know her. She used to do the, I don't know, there for a time, Comcast, they called it Comcast Sportsnet back then. Now they call it NBC Philadelphia or NBC Comcast Appalooza Sportsnet. I don't know what the hell they call it, but, you know, the local NBC sports presenters here in town, whoever owns them and whatever they call themselves these days. You remember Jillian? She used to do that show. They used to do like a morning type show, kind of a, I think they called it Breakfast on Broad or something.
Yeah, that was it. Yes, it was her and another lady, and it was, what was it, Rob Ellis and...
Was Parzetta part of that or not?
No, he was the 700 Club.
That's right. Anyway, very talented woman, and she got picked up a couple years ago with Fox News, and now she does the early, like the pregame Fox and Friends, like that godforsaken, got to be made up and in the chair and ready to go at 3 a.m. TV show. I don't know, and she looks stunning. I mean, she's wildly talented, and she's a beautiful woman, and every time I see her as we get ready for this radio show where no one has to look at me, I look at her and how attractive she is, and I think, and she... I follow her on social media, and she will often comment on all the work that goes into dolling yourself up for TV. I mean, that's, you know, women do that on TV all the time. They're posting pictures of themselves pre-makeup, post-makeup, thanks to my hair people. You know the work that goes into that kind of stuff to make those network people look TV ready? And she's on the air at 3, so they're waking up at like 1, 2 in the morning. Well, really more like 1. I mean, they're going to bed like at the, you know, early evening, late afternoon to get up in the middle of the night to start morning TV. You have to really love your work if you're her.
Absolutely. That's one thing I always remember you saying about TV and why you don't like to do it as much, because it is like makeup chair for like an hour.
And it doesn't matter what you say. For a million reasons, you could be on television talking about the most important things, and all you'll get when you're done is, hey, I really like that tie. Are you going to cut your beard? I was just talking about a cure for cancer. We just discovered a cure for cancer. Yeah, I know, but I really wouldn't have gone with gray. So, no, people say, don't you want to do TV? Don't you? I do not, for a couple of reasons. It is all time crunched. Everything about TV is hitting your mark, being on time. We've got no more allotted than just this amount of time, and then we're moving on to the next thing. There's absolutely no room for dialogue. Everything is pre-scripted well in advance. There is no room for error in TV whatsoever. And to top it all off, it doesn't matter because all anybody thinks is, hey, that tie. Look at his tie. So for a thousand reasons, I've always been more in love with the authenticity of radio. And, I admire TV people who pull it off and make it look good and natural and fun and inviting, as Jillian does, because I couldn't do it. But anyway, my point is, I was watching her. She's interviewing the chapter lead or former chapter lead of Black Lives Matter St. Paul, Minnesota, who has just resigned. She's live interviewing him, and this guy is blasting away at Black Lives Matter and how it has been completely corrupted and hijacked by who? Could you guess? Well, let me back up and give you a hint. The thrust of this guy's resignation is the fact that schools in the St. Paul area where he was representing Black Lives Matter, the schools are in dire straits, and that Minnesota generally, he says, now I haven't looked at this, I can't confirm or deny it, but he says that Minnesota schools are leaders in underserving kids, particularly kids of color in the country, in terms of their ability to read and write and just do general education stuff. He says they're a leader in trailing education efforts. So given that and the thrust of the interview, he has resigned from Black Lives Matter, and he says that Black Lives Matter has been corrupted by who? Now, he's talking about nationally. The entire apparatus of Black Lives Matter has been corrupted and hijacked by?
I would say the Democrat Party.
Well, yes, he did say the Democrat Party, but who is the one of the biggest? And again, remember that his thrust for resignation was the way Black Lives Matter was failing black school children specifically. So, yes, he did say the Democrat Party, but who, a major, major arm and contributor, and think lockdowns, think pandemic of the last year, who has been at the forefront of grinding the nation to a halt and fighting it tooth and nail to ever resume to normalcy?
At the American Federation of Teachers?
Teachers unions. That's exactly right. The teachers unions. This Black Lives Matter guy appropriately and correctly said the biggest enemy of blacks and black children in particular in this country getting ahead and advancing and learning to read and write are the teachers unions, who are in bed, he appropriately identified, or in bed with the Democrat Party. And he said he could no longer in good conscience work with an organization called Black Lives Matter that brought in $90 million last year. And yet, in his city, in his state of Minnesota, he says black children cannot read and write. Black Lives Matter cannot matter if black kids specifically are attacked and black families are attacked for wanting to seek out charter schools. And this is something that Black Lives Matter is fighting because they have been infested by teachers' union mentality that says charter schools are the enemy. And this guy said, I am not going to affiliate myself with a group who calls itself Black Lives Matter if they're going to be hijacked by a teachers union and tell me that black families are wrong or ill-intended or shouldn't pursue charter school educations for their kids when we have such a terrible rate of reading and writing in Minnesota. Now, again, that's just his corner of the world, but it was beautifully articulated, I think, for the entirety of the country. And this is the sham. This is the big lie that is all of yesterday. And Grandpa going down there to Tulsa and just telling lie after lie after lie, bigoted lie after bigoted lie. You know, this Black Lives Matter co-founder or co-chair or whoever the hell she was that you've heard resigned because she bought four homes and was sitting on mountains of cash getting rich, as Marxists do, because that's what Marxists are. They create an oppressor-oppressive dynamic. You're oppressed. There is an oppressor. I'll get even with them. Send me your money. It's classic. They live high on the hog while the, air quote, oppressed continue to struggle and never get ahead. Always just have to make do. While the leaders are always getting fat and happy, it's axiomatically true of Marxism. The leaders of Marxism, of communism, of totalitarianism, the leadership always gets fat and happy. And the oppressed, as they identify and lead on their behalf, the oppressed always just get enough to get their beaks wet and make do. They get the crumbs. But it's all, again, it's all funneled toward the notion of we're going to get even with the oppressors. And it's not me. I'm not oppressing you. It's the system. You gotta throw your money, your time, your energies, your investment, your passions behind me, because I'm going to help you get even with your oppressors. Never mind that the oppressed situation never gets better. And as this BLM chair or head, whoever he was in St. Paul, realized, hey, wait just a minute. You guys have taken in $90 million. One of the co-leaders of this organization owns 4 homes, and most of the black kids in Minnesota still can't read and write proficiently. And you're telling us that we're bad people for wanting to seek out charter schools? I'm not sure Black Lives Matter is doing the work that they said that they were setting out to do, said this very, very smart, very well-informed guy who's like he's just had cold water splashed on him and woke up from being held hostage. It was actually a really remarkable interview. I'm glad I saw it. I typically wouldn't have even seen this. I was in my office and the TV was on, and I just happened to see this in passing. And I thought, what a wonderful interview that I wish everybody could see after the day that Grandpa put on yesterday. Grandpa down in Tulsa telling people that black folks, did you know that black folks have no access to banks or accountants or lawyers? Did you know that?
I'd forgotten.
Black people have no access to banking, attorneys. I had no idea how dire it was out there.
The data shows young black entrepreneurs are just as capable of succeeding given the chance as white entrepreneurs are. But they don't have lawyers. They don't have they don't have accountants, but they have great ideas.
Folks, what's going on here? What is that about? Somebody's in trouble. I maintain, and I haven't seen anything recently, but I think it's just true because we know it from the election. Some people quibbled with me on this. Oh, Chris, I think you're wrong when you say he's in political trouble. Why, the polls say he's never been doing better. Well, first of all, which polls are you citing? How many polls have you seen that say Biden's never been doing better? How many polls have been done? It's funny. It seemed almost every week we were treated to some new poll about how Donald Trump's performance was looking. How many do you remember hearing about lately with Biden's approval or Kamala's approval or the country's approval of Biden's handling of this or that? How many? I watch this stuff for a living every day. I'm on social media. Every day I monitor at least 3 cable news channels for 6 hours a day. That's the sadness of my reality. And I can tell you that with regularity, you could set your watch to it. One of them was constantly talking about the latest poll out from this and such says Donald Trump's approval is underwater with this and such group. The latest poll says most of the country hates what Donald Trump. The latest poll says most of the country hates Donald Trump this, hates Donald Trump that. The latest poll, I don't see any of the latest polling says on Joe Biden. Yes, there was one a couple of weeks ago that says, oh, the public really approves of the way he's handling COVID. Things are really looking up. Yeah, one. Okay, so you got one. Show me another. Show me 2. And by the way, this performance the last couple of days, what he did on Memorial Day, which we covered here yesterday, and again his performance in Tulsa yesterday, this isn't for just anybody. This is for black voters, and it's pandering at that. It's the worst. It's the worst. You poor black people can't get an attorney, can't find a bank, can't find an accountant. You got great ideas. I mean, everybody knows it. You're just as capable of doing great things as we whites are, but you just can't find attorneys. He keeps saying that. They just keep saying it as though it's true, as though black people themselves don't know that he's lying or really believe that, which I know black people in mass do not. So what am I saying here? They don't believe him. And nobody's talking to you about this. No one's gonna say this. Everyone just listens to him and what he says about black people, and we all nod along and go, oh, well, my gosh, that sounds terrible what the black people must be going through out there. Anybody actually talking to black people? Have black people been surveyed or polled? Have you heard any kind of study of blacks and their inability to get access to legal representation or banking? You haven't, is the answer. There is no such polling. There is no such study. There is no such analysis. It's just a bunch of liberal whites telling you how rotten and oppressed things are and oppressive things are for black people, and that they've never had it worse. It's never been worse than it is right now for black people. I mean, this is, you know, this is pre-Rosa Parks. This is pre-fire hoses and dogs and segregated schools. This is as bad as it's ever been in this country and getting worse. Because white racism, folks, the white man, you white men, yes, I realize I'm one, but for purposes of this conversation, I'm talking to you. You white men, you're particularly virulent. You're dangerous. It's never been worse. The biggest threats facing this country, really, not Al-Qaeda. He said it yesterday. It's not Al-Qaeda. It's white supremacy.
We must not give hate a safe harbor. As I said in my address to the joint session of Congress, according to the intelligence community, terrorism from white supremacy is the most lethal threat to the homeland today. Not ISIS, not Al-Qaeda, white supremacists.
Even the people in that room slow clapped it. Even the people in the room were like, I'm not sure that's an accurate statement. I want you to know what we're watching, and I want you to understand what this past weekend was, Memorial Day and into yesterday. I want you to understand that this was the opening salvo. This was the launch. This was the Democrat outreach. This was the cry for help. This was the warning call, whatever you want to say, to the black voter. And the GOP better wake up and understand what we're watching here, because what Donald Trump managed to achieve with the black vote for Republicans was pretty remarkable. Now, again, it wasn't huge, and I'm not saying that Republicans are anywhere close to pulling off majorities of black votes, but Donald Trump made huge inroads with the black vote, huge. Meanwhile, for the second straight election cycle, black voters have not turned out and are unimpressed, thoroughly unenthused and unimpressed with the Democrat nominee. Hillary was a skunk to them, and Joe Biden was not any better. And the only one worse than Joe Biden was his half-black vice president, who they kicked to the curb before even Grandpa. You have to remember, if you don't, because it's easy to forget this, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were not received well or well-liked or well-thought of among black Democrat voters. That's a problem for these two, and it continues to be. Black voters do not trust Joe Biden. Kamala Harris was responsible for telling black people why you shouldn't trust Joe Biden. And the only person they didn't trust more than Joe Biden was Kamala Harris. Black Democrat voters were not and have not been excited about the Democrat ticket for two cycles now, and Donald Trump made inroads. And Memorial Day became the launch date for a political campaign targeting black voters who they're scared to death they lost to Trump. The fact is, Biden is never going to create the kind of jobs and increase the kind of wages for black voters that Trump did. That's a fact. Trump made huge inroads economically for blacks in this country. Biden and Democrats do not. And as I mentioned off the top with that guy in St. Paul, talking to Jillian Mealy today, he's waking up and realizing $90 million into the coffers of Black Lives Matter. And what do they have to show for it? Kids in Minnesota who still can't read and write. And he came to understand that after they attacked black families for wanting to better their kids' education and go into charter schools, and they said, how dare you? He realized that the teachers' unions who corrupt the Democrat Party, they're one and the same, have now hijacked and corrupted the movement called Black Lives Matter, and that they don't think Black Lives Matter. Because, like, as I said, all good Marxists, they want the, air quote, oppressed to continue to think that they're their salvation. When, in fact, it was guys like Donald Trump when he said, what the hell have you got to lose? And as it turned out, it wasn't too dangerous a decision for black voters to decide to go with Trump. And while they didn't en masse, many more did than any previous Republican in recent history. And having done so, what was their return? Lower taxes, more job creation, increased wages, lockdown borders. Democrats are turning to phony racism again because they are in deep trouble heading into 2022. And I don't care what anybody tells you, because you're not seeing any polls to confirm or deny anything I'm saying. And that tells me I know I'm right. They're in trouble. And any kind of rot you hear from the New York Times or some mainstream polling outfit about, oh, Biden's never been more popular. Why, they're happy as hell. No, they're not. And you haven't heard any specific black polling, have you? Go ahead and find it. Send it to me if you can. You won't find it, though, because it's not been done. Republicans better understand what's going on here. Trump made huge inroads with black votes. Democrats are hemorrhaging them. And that's what this whole pandering, disgusting show is. Black people can't get banks. Black people can't find attorneys. Black people don't know accountants. It's outrageously racist and untrue and insulting. And they're not interested in bettering the lives of black people, no matter what show they put on in Tulsa yesterday. Telephone number 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com.
The last word she said to me. Now I'm wishing she was still here with me.
Watch the Illadelph bad boy go quote for quote. Well, y'all want the best? Well, I'm right here. You're looking for competition? Ain't no one there. Y'all in the stands, listen. Kicking dirt and missing. My heavenly flows put MCs in hell's kitchen. And I'm so hot. Y'all burning up hot. I step in, it's like the wedding between hope and Armageddon. The hip hop Moses to where we heading, y'all.
I'm coming. You can't stop me.
I was just imagining Dr. Fauci doing the audio version of his book. Oof. You know, because when you write a book, that's what you're supposed to do, go in the studio and record the audio version. Can you imagine listening to that guy for an entire book?
Oh, man.
Chapter 2. Oh, need a lozenge and lots of hot tea. Telephone number 610-850-0990, 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. This inspired me again today, as we do from time to time when new books come out. I'm never very satisfied with the titles that these people give their books. I think that you can do so much better. And so today, throughout the course of the morning and at the conclusion of the show today, we'll perhaps choose our favorite, but I would encourage you to start thinking about this now. And for the efforts, we'll put together a little Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer prize pack, perhaps a summertime T-shirt, a chapeau, just in time for the summertime heat. We'll put together a little something for you.
I think a Trump Wildwood button as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, we still got some of those vintage Watch the Trump Car, Please.
Yes.
Trump came to Wildwood, South Jersey, back in January of last year for Jeff Van Drew. So we have one of those to throw in today. You can do better than the name they've given Dr. Fauci's upcoming book, can't you? Expect the Unexpected, 10 Lessons on Truth, Service, and the Way Forward. Surely you can do better as a title than that. What would you title Dr. Fauci's new autobiography? His Life Philosophy, due out this November. You seen the cover of it? Ironically, what he's doing on the cover? Taking off the mask. He's in black and white, and the mask is all in color. Now, what's that imagery supposed to convey, exactly? That the mask is in color, and he's in black and white. Expect the Unexpected, 10 Lessons on Truth, Service, and the Way Forward. There's always symbolism and stuff like that. What is the black and white Fauci with the beautifully multicolored, the mask of many colors? Very biblical. What is that? He's taking it off. By the way, speaking of taking the mask off, today, I guess, is official, right? In Philadelphia proper, today's the day. Full house at the Wells Fargo Center for Game 5, Sixers-Wizards tonight. Capacity is allowed. No masks, I think.
I thought the masking was still 70%. 70% have to be vaccinated, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't even. I don't wear them or listen anymore. And the vaccine thing in New York, I was kind of wondering when or if. And by the way, brace yourselves, because I can just almost feel it coming from Center City as they wonder aloud to themselves, hey, New York might be onto something. Maybe we should consider it. You seen what New York's doing? They're creating vaccine, non-vaccine sections at the stadiums.
How did I miss that?
That's right. Segregation, anybody? Hey, black water fountain, white water fountain. No coloreds at the lunch counter. Why don't we just start hanging those signs again? This is where, I tell you, Candace Owens and Tucker had a fantastic conversation about this last night. And Candace, as she always is, was just roaring on it. And she's so right that throughout history, this country has a very, very bad history with telling the public at large that they know what's in their best interests and to follow the science. Once upon a time in this country, it was widely accepted that black people were not scientifically best to fraternize with the general population of whites. Thus, they needed their own seating, they needed their own water fountains, they needed their own schools, and there were a lot of people that said that was scientifically. Hell, Margaret Sanger, the woman who created Planned Parenthood as we know it today, the modern era's abortion queen. It was all rooted in eugenics, that blacks and black children were just inferior in every way, and this was an opportunity to wipe it out. That was science. And so here we are in 2021, but now the science says vaccinated versus unvaccinated. The vaccinated can sit here. You people who choose not to get the vaccine or won't show proof that you've had it, you sit here, cordoned off here, in the unvaccinated, the unclean section, like a leper colony. Now, what makes that even more interesting? If you take a look at the government data as to who has taken the shot, in terms of the population of this country, Asians lead the pack, incidentally. Asian Americans lead the pack in terms of those who've taken the shot. Followed by, want to guess? Who's the second most of demographic nationwide to have taken the shot for COVID?
White women.
Whites. Just whites generally. Yeah. I don't know if specifically by gender, but whites. Now, see, the narrative has been on cable news, left-wing cable news, MSNBC and other places, that white men are the most recalcitrant. Again, just like we're racists, white men are also anti-science. White men are a real problem in this country. They're bigots. They're roaming around waiting to wipe out anybody who doesn't look like them. And they're anti-science. They won't take the vaccine. They're filthy and unsafe. And they're Trump voters. And they're bad guys. White Republican. Well, I'll throw straight in there, too. Straight white Republican voting men. The most dangerous, the most odious and insidious creature in all the country. Cable News has identified you, white, straight, Republican voting men, is the most dangerous, far and away, in every category, whether it's race, whether it's vaccine, you're the worst. Women, gays, all of it. You're the worst. Sorry, white guys. Bad times for you. But it's not true. As a statistical matter, the government study shows that Asian Americans as a population of the country, in terms of percentage, they're the highest population to receive it, followed by whites, followed by... which group next?
Hispanic?
That's right. And the dead last, least vaccinated group as a percentage in this country are blacks. Now, Candace made a brilliant point that this country, again, has a terrible, terrible history of injecting black people with experimental drugs and... untested drugs and disproven drugs, and black people are naturally wary of the government telling them what they're to inject in their body. More than whites, more than white Republican men. Yes, it's true. And in fact, if you just do a cursory search in the Inquirer for those liberals that don't believe what I'm saying, look it up, because I know we've talked about it on this show. I can't remember because all the shows blend together. I mean, I've done a year of shows that all feel like they're the same show in some ways. So it's hard for me to remember exactly, but I know it was this year. I know this year I came to the air and did an extensive conversation about the Philadelphia Inquirer reporting how troubled they were that blacks in this city were not getting the vaccine. This is a majority black city, Philadelphia. People don't talk about that much. They forget that. But the majority of the population in Philadelphia proper is black. And I say that and stress that only because when you talk about people who are not willing or not getting the vaccine that's plentiful and readily available at every corner, you know, when they were giving it in mass at the convention center, who was not taking it? Who was not doing it? Blacks weren't doing it. Blacks weren't taking it. Why? Healthy skepticism is why. I remember the story. The Inquirer was walking about one particular neighborhood, running up to black people going, hey, why aren't you getting the vaccine? And they were giving very honest answers. We don't trust it. I remember this reporter walked up to a group of young black men and they were like, yeah, we're good. No, I'm not. No, we're healthy and I'm not. No, I'm not. I don't trust the government. I'm not taking it. What's this? Yeah, this is another. This is all part of kind of like what I said in my opening monologue. This lie. This great lie that Democrats and the government are going to take care of you poor, stupid black people. Oh, you poor, stupid, helpless black people. Let we Democrats handle everything. You just hand us the keys and there. Do-do-do-do-do-do. We'll take care of you. And you know what's happening? Black people are getting wise and have been getting wise to this. And Donald Trump was a big reason why. They don't trust their betters in government. And I'm not saying that this, you know, the country's a panacea for black folks. I understand there are still struggles and I understand there's still trouble. I'm not suggesting we're out of the woods on it. I'm not suggesting there's equality and harmony all across the land. But black folks have awakened to the idea that the Democrat Party and the government at large has lied to them, disappointed them, let them down, ripped their families apart, and kept them oppressed for generations. The dam is breaking. And yet, what do Democrats do? Their instinct is not to empower and to embolden. It's to continue to pander and talk about how put upon and how poor they are and how they're going to come along and they're going to fix it if you just trust them. Black folks don't believe them. And so black folks are not getting this vaccine is my point. And so what does that mean? When we start talking about baseball games where they say, hey, unvaccinated, sit here. You vaccinated people can sit anywhere you want, but the unvaccinated sit there. If you can't prove you've had your vaccine, then you sit there. Well, if a majority of black people in this country are still not getting the vaccine, 70% of them, according to 2 weeks ago in the latest survey that that I just read, 70% of blacks in this country have still not gotten the vaccine. 70% of blacks in this country have still not gotten the vaccine. So if the new standard is we're going to quarantine and isolate and set people in their own section for not having been vaccinated, we're going right back to Jim Crow era South, where the Democrats were in control back then, too. And just like the Democrats of old, the Democrats of the new have resurfaced and come up with a new segregated society where the unvaccinated have their own section to sit, just like they created their own lunch counter and their own schools and their own water fountains in the South. They're doing it again. Democrats are doing again what they did in the Jim Crow era segregated South. They're back. The Democrats are in control, and they're doing it again. Sit in your own section, black folks. That's what they're doing. Care to deny it? Go ahead and try. No, I didn't forget. I just got a little distracted. Fauci's new book today, On the Line, is a summertime prize pack from Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. We put together a T-shirt, a hat, got our a vintage collector's. This was a very rare visit by any Republican president to South Jersey. President Trump and his visit to South Jersey to Wildwood when we were all there for that big party. Watch the Trump car, please. Button. We still got a couple of those hanging around, so we'll put it together for you in a summertime down the shore package. Giving that away today for the title, the best title submitted during the show today for Dr. Fauci's new book, due out in November. Isn't it nice that he had time to work on a book? throughout the last year.
Especially in time for summer reading.
I don't remember where I came across something yesterday that said people are working harder now than ever before. That Americans are working because of the pandemic, because people are staying at home and Zooming in. I hear this a lot. I heard this a lot from teachers, frankly. Your day doesn't end anymore. It used to be you'd go into the office, you'd go into work, and then you could, for a lot of people, and not everybody was great at it, but for a lot of people, your day would end. You'd shut off the computer or whatever. You'd put the dust jacket on the computer terminal and walk out the door. Remember when people used to do that?
I used to.
Yeah, right. But you'd leave, and you'd go home, and you'd have dinner, and you'd chill out, and then you'd come in at 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, whatever, in the morning the next day. Well, that's not happening anymore. They say now people are working all the time because the new situation that's been set up is that you're just kind of permanently on remote access at any time. There are no hours. And so people that typically used to just do stuff at the office and then come home, there's no delineation between the two places anymore. So you're just always working. Now, I mean, thankfully, I like my work. So that's always kind of been what we do. There is really no, people always say to me, when do you prepare for the show? I say, you never stop preparing for a show like this. You're always preparing for a show. Every day you get up is prep for the show, really. There is no, window of time. But I like what I do. If I hated what I did, and then I had to work at home, and then, all the time, the boss, morning, noon, and night, is texting me, Skyping, Zooming with me, telling me, Anyway, my point is people are working harder than ever before. And Dr. Fauci ostensibly is supposed to be the lead warrior on how we're all supposed to get back to our regular lives. He's been at the helm since AIDS in the 80s under Ronald Reagan, which incidentally has still not been cured. But throughout this whole last year and some change, Dr. Fauci found time somehow to write a book. Did you see the story about the emails? They've requested access to his emails, and now they're looking through what he's been writing back and forth with the World Health Organization and China in the early days of this last year. Very interesting stuff. Lots of kissy face love letters. It's a shame he doesn't use emojis. I would suspect there'd be a lot of those smiley faces, kissing hearts kind of stuff to China. It's pretty disgusting. But anyway, if you can come up with a better title than Dr. Fauci's book, Expect the Unexpected, 10 Lessons on Truth, Service, and the Way Forward. The winning title today for Dr. Fauci's book will get our Philadelphia's AM990 The Answer Summertime Prize Pack. So name Dr. Fauci's book at your leisure. We'll just keep a running list today during the show. If you get a good idea, Fast Eddie will jot it down. This is boring. Expect the Unexpected, 10 Lessons on Truth, Service, and the Way Forward. That's the Fauci book due out in November. I thought you could do better. I know this audience well, and I was confident that you could give Dr. Fauci's new book a better title. So if you come up with a good one and you like it, let us know at 610-850-0990. And you may very well win our summertime prize pack from Philadelphia's AM990 The Answer. Coming up today, Alex Marlow will be with us after the top of the hour. He's Breitbart's senior editor-in-chief, author of a brand-new book called Breaking the News. Fantastic read. His concerns about China and China's influence with mainstream media is real. And Alex is one of the kind of the ground-floor members of Breitbart when Andrew was still alive. So I have some questions for him about maybe all these years later. I used to write for Andrew Breitbart's what was called Big Hollywood back then. Andrew really understood that politics was downstream from pop culture. And so he was keenly aware, I think, well ahead of his time in creating Breitbart and becoming the entity that he is or that his organization is after he died. He saw this looming in the horizon, and now it's here. I can't help but wonder what Alex would think of what Andrew might think today, given what we're living through and the way the media has just all but completely covered up China's role in this pandemic. Lou Barletta is with us at 8 o'clock. You know him as the former mayor of Hazleton. He's a former congressman here in Pennsylvania. He made an unsuccessful run for Senate. He's back at it again. He wants to be the next governor here in Pennsylvania. Be an interesting race if he gets in. He'd be kind of the second name, at least we know, name that's familiar to us. Joe Gale being the other that we know in our region who's jumped in. Will there be others? Probably, but Lou Barletta, probably the best-known name statewide. Lou will be with us at 8 o'clock to talk about his run for governor. Gordon Chang with us. The Wuhan lab leak theory. Gordon is going to talk a lot about that. You know, he wrote The Coming Collapse of China a few years ago. He's been one of our foremost authorities on the subject of China. He knows it well, and he'll be with us at 8:30 to talk about that. So, telephone number, 610-850-0990. Oh, good. Okay, I like this. Mike in Orland to get us started today. Hey, Mike, you got a Dr. Fauci book title to kick things off?
Yeah, I do, but I was thinking five masks, two masks, one mask, you know, keep it Dr. Seuss. But since that time, and I've been sitting on hold, I came up with a better one.
Okay.
Yeah, and you have to use the voice while you say the title.
All right.
I'm an asshole.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. That's very nice. That's very nice. 610-850-0990. Keep it clean, folks. We've got federal guidelines to follow, for the love of God. What the hell's wrong with Mike? He's been drinking. He loses himself. He's got a perfectly lovely submission, and then while I was waiting, I thought I'd help you lose your federal license. Stop it, Mike. I mean, I appreciate the sentiment, but over beers, man, not on the air. One mask, two mask. Maybe gray mask, blue mask. You know, they come in different shades now. Remember how pathetic that felt when my wife started handing out masks to the family when we would go into a store, and she actually said the words aloud one day, "Would you like gray or would you like blue? I ordered some black, but they're on back order." Like, what are we doing? Just a humiliating. Never understand it. I'll never understand it. Dr. Fauci book titles. That's what we're looking for today. 610-850-0990. He's got a brand new book coming out in November. We have a Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer summertime prize pack on the line for you this morning. If you come up with the best Dr. Fauci book title, the release isn't until November, so there's plenty of time to get it to the publisher. By the way, who is publishing it? Did I see that? Let me look here. Probably Simon & Schuster, the same people that refused to publish Josh Hawley's book. Doesn't say. Is that upcoming? Oh, according to the publisher's law, some of it available for pre-order now. Expect the unexpected, 10 lessons on truth, service, and the way forward. No, it doesn't say who published it. Let's go to Ventnor. Sam. Hey, Sam, you got a name for Dr. Fauci's new book?
I do. The Undercover Mask Man.
The Undercover Mask Man. Hang on just a second. Again, we're going to be collecting these throughout the morning, taking your submissions, and then the winning submission will get the prize back. Hey, Marianne in Philadelphia, you have a name for Dr. Fauci's new book?
Yes, the Ask, A-S-S-K, in the Mask.
The Ask in the Mask. I like that. Ask in the Mask is always fun. 610-850-0990. Bill's in South Jersey. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Doing well, my man. You have a Fauci book title?
Yeah, let's go with Expect Me to Flip-Flop on Everything COVID-Related.
That's okay, I like that. It's more just a straightforward, very declarative title. You know exactly what you're going to get there. Well done, Bill. All right, 610-850-0990. Keep them coming. Alex Marlowe next.
WNTP Philadelphia. Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Download our free mobile app at 990theanswer.com. You live here. He lives here.
Thank you for helping my family and I get through these very strange times.
Can I just say how much I am enjoying your new show? Really good. You are loved.
I appreciate you, Chris. You're doing great, great service to Delaware Valley.
But I tell you, if you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, then you ain't black.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris Stegall on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer.
Brand new book out there from Breitbart's senior editor-in-chief. It's called Breaking the News. It's a great read, an important one, timely. Alex Marlowe is the author. He joins us now on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Alex, good morning. Welcome in.
Thrilled to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm not sure if there's ever been a better case maybe to be made than right now for your book and what we're learning about Communist China and COVID. I thought of you when I knew we were going to talk. This cesspool of media that's now coming around to, well, now legitimate voices are questioning the role of the lab in China. And of course, by legitimate, they mean not Tom Cotton, not President Trump. And the media now seems to want to embrace this. I thought, what a great jumping off point for your brand new book.
Yeah, it really is. And this has been one of the biggest things I investigated in the year of research I did in the book. And the book is not a lot of hot takes and it's not a lot of memoir, though I do pepper in some of that stuff because I think it's fun. But the book is really a serious piece of research that I undertook with a small team of journalists. And one of the main things we looked into was the connections between the American media establishment and Communist China. And what I found was frankly shocking is that virtually every major media outlet in the United States has some tie to Communist China. And this adds up perfectly when you look at this lab leak story. All of the vested interests didn't want it to be the lab. They all wanted it to be the bat soup or the pangolin as the origin of the virus. Fauci didn't want it to be the lab because he'd funded the lab. Joe Biden didn't want it to be the lab because Trump had said maybe it was the lab. The Democrats didn't want it to be the lab because Pompeo and Cotton were saying it could have been the lab. And the media didn't want it to be the lab because if the lab was the origin of the virus, then it might throw into question their business deals with Communist China. And as I said, almost every major one of those outlets does do major business in China. And that's why they were rooting so hard for this to be some big accident and circumstantial and not something unleashed on us by the Chinese Communist Party.
Alex, I don't mean to delve too much into this because I know those of you who are close to Andrew Breitbart don't. You're kind of loath to go down this path of what would Andrew say or think because he's not here to speak for himself. But I assume you knew him well, and you know, I have dear friends like Larry O'Connor and Meredith, his wife, who I know worked with you guys in the early days, and Dana Lash and Ben and others. So you were a great group of people who surrounded Andrew in launching Breitbart and what we now know is that name Breitbart. Did we understand, or was he onto something and didn't even understand himself at the time, how disgustingly corrupt media was? I mean, was that the whole impetus for his project and hiring guys like you at the beginning? Do you think if he were here today, would he be surprised at how bad it is, or he already knew?
Both. I think both are true, and I love talking about Andrew, so don't feel bad at all. It is a service I get to do, I think, on behalf of this great nation that I get to be someone who is an ambassador for Andrew's legacy. Andrew was a giant and a visionary. And his influence is all over everything we do at Breitbart and what's in my book, but also in so many of the great people you mentioned and countless others and their careers. But yes, Andrew understood how fundamentally awful the media was and how systematic it was. It was not some sort of a coincidence that they all happened to be slightly liberal. No, this was their business model. Their business model was not selling freedom to the public. It was selling some sort of statism, collectivism, and really sort of an oligarchy where aristocracy and media aristocracy was controlling so much of our lives. I think he would have been surprised at how quickly it escalated despite the great work of conservatives pointing out how untenable it is to continue to be so liberal in the media and how embarrassing it was so often. The mistakes that were made by the media for the last several decades have just been so humiliating. I think he'd be a little surprised at how the media has just gone headlong into this embracing of the Communist Party in China, embracing of the corporate wokeism. I do think it went further than Andrew would have thought, but I think the patterns clearly are still consistent with what he documented when he was alive.
Alex Marlowe's book is called Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. He was a guy who also understood and appreciated so much that, you know, politics was downstream from popular culture. He got that, and I learned that from him. And excuse me, when I was first, he launched something at that time called Big Hollywood, and I was very, very interested in where comedy was going all those years ago. He and I talked a lot about that back then, and I started to write about, you know, late night comedy and variety show comedy during the Jon Stewart years, and, you know, SNL before it just got so corrupt and so terrible. I mean, it's not even comedy anymore. But I so often think about him not just with the comedy, but now with sports. Sports really was not on my radar anyway. Maybe it was yours, Alex, or his, but sports even now. It's like there's nowhere you can turn from church to sports to school to, you know, pop entertainment, comedy, you know, and then, of course, certainly just regular old news media. It doesn't seem like there's a single vestige left untouched.
Yeah, you're right about this, and this is something that is connects perfectly with your first question because, again, it's the same patterns, but it is a very rapid escalation in terms of the wokeification of America. The entertainment world was always liberal, and Andrew knew that. He grew up in Los Angeles and was a Los Angeles resident, and he always was a late-night comedy aficionado, and he was a music journalist in a prior life. And so I think that none of the woke leftism coming from Hollywood surprises you, but sports is a little different because sports is the ultimate meritocracy, the ultimate masculinity in many cases. The cream rises to the top. There's no excuses. It's all of these, and not to mention rampant capitalism, where people who are really good at shooting a basketball can make $30 million a year plus endorsements. I mean, you would think all of this is the exact opposite of what leftist America wants, but that doesn't matter because the culture co-opted all of these people, and it's destroying it from the inside out. And it is something that is very scary because the culture has always been dominated by the left, and once they conquer something, be it academia or entertainment, well, now they're on to sports, and sports is really in jeopardy. I'll tell you right now, I was a huge sports super fan, and now I watch maybe a little bit of the PGA Tour and almost nothing else, and yes, it's because of the politics. I mean, to watch racial equity now shoots three-pointers because that's the name on the back of the jerseys in the NBA. It's just ridiculous. And, of course, it's not going to appeal to much of the audience.
Yeah, and they're losing audience because of it. I mean, do you think that ultimately I talk often about entertainment just because it's the thing, you know, variety television, late-night comedy has always been interesting to me since I was a kid. And I thought to myself, surely after Trump is gone, you'll see a shift, and maybe somebody like a Fallon, who had done very well staying above the fray and out of it and really trying to do kind of sincere variety show television. He had been winning early, then he lost to the super woke, super left-wing, you know, Colbert, Kimmel delivery, and I thought, well, that will certainly shrivel up and die if there's no Trump. So far, it hasn't. I guess they've been content now to go with the niche audience. They like the idea of being broadly appealing is dead. Is that it?
There's two answers to this, and the first one is the niche audience is key because now there's just so much content. There's so much on YouTube and so much on all the streaming services that there is only going to be so much audience people are able to get. There's very few things that unite the country as a culture. And it's very rare when those things break through. And so for the most part, you're better off trying to cultivate a very loyal niche audience. And so if you go further left, like a Colbert, who wasn't always as hard left as he is, and if he goes further left and he gets, he alienates 500,000 of his viewers who are not on the left, but he picks up another 600,000, or he picks up another 500,000, but those people are more loyal and might buy more of the products advertised on his show. That's a victory for him. And that's the thing that we need to think about in this age where we have so much content. But you're correct to note something that maybe the business model is not that they need to squeeze every penny out in the entertainment world. And that's the argument I make in Breaking the News, which is that each part of these media outlets, they're part of these giant international conglomerates, and they need to protect international interests. Because remember, take the John Cena example from last week where he was kissing China's butt. Well, John Cena is opening this Fast and Furious movie. It's a Universal Pictures movie. Universal Pictures just opened up a theme park in Beijing. Because he's just trying to do business for NBC, Comcast, Universal, a gigantic corporation in China. That's his goal. He doesn't care if he pisses off a few right-wingers in America in the process.
Great, great take. And it's something the great Rush Limbaugh, Alex Marlow, said often, is that, you know, in his business and so many businesses, you know, it's the only business he knew of, the news business, that could tick off, alienate, tell its viewers they're wrong, they're the problem, they're the idiots, and continue on doing business as they always have. The customer is always wrong in the news business, and they never seem to pay the price, was Rush's point. And he's right. It's still the case.
Yeah, and I want to reset people's thinking, if the book can do a service to people, is that it's not looking at it in terms of just ratings is too superficial. It's not about that. It's about how much they're able to protect the gigantic billion, multi-billion dollar corporate interests worldwide. And I think when you see that, and you see that what NBC does with their left-wing newsroom, they're not going to make mistakes about investigating China. Thus, they're not going to compromise a Universal Pictures and Universal Studios' ability to monetize in China. Those are the connections that are happening in every single newsroom. Think about ABC Disney. We know George Stephanopoulos is not going to go hard on China. Thus, we know that Disney is going to continue to operate in China with impunity. This is the whole math that I think has been lost on much of the public, and I hopefully the book illuminates that to people.
Alex Marlow's book is called Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. There seems to be something more honest in a way. And again, I know this may be superficial given what you just said, but I will watch NBC and realize what I'm getting from the outset. Whereas CNN continues, for instance, to try. I monitor three cables every day, you know, Fox, yeah. CNN, MSNBC. And of those three, CNN always is the one that seems the most dishonest because it pretends to be something it's so obviously not, and it seems to be the most aggressive at gaslighting. Whereas MSNBC, I'll give them the credit. At least you know what you're getting the second you turn it on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm totally with you on that. I think CNN is, for some reason, much more irritating to me than MSNBC.
Yes.
And I actually spend a little more time on MSNBC in the book because I do think MSNBC really does hit home with this certain group of left-wing Americans that was known at a time as the resistance, the anti-Trump resistance. So I find NBC fascinating still, but CNN is just the fact that they really do present themselves as the arbiters of truth. And the other thing is, if you go top to bottom throughout their lineup, there's so many people there who have reputations for being somewhat neutral, who over time become more partisan left-wing activists, which is still shocking, even though there's no doubt in my mind that Rachel Maddow is much further left than Jake Tapper. But Rachel Maddow has always been a committed leftist openly. Jake Tapper acts like he's a neutral guy.
Yes.
He's a left-wing guy. And that to me is more offensive. Even though I probably agree with Tapper 20% more, I still would rather have dinner with Rachel Maddow because at least with her, I don't feel like I'm going to get lied to as much.
That is so smart and so right. I've said that 1,000 times. I prefer an authentic, honest, upfront liberal to a phony who says they're an independent or a moderate when I know damn well they're not. I can't stand that, Alex. It drives me crazy.
It's the absolute worst. And something that the book does, it does document these examples of places like the New York Times where they'll actually change headlines because the Twitter mob gets mad at them. Because the woke millennials in their newsroom gets mad at them, they'll actually change their editorial decision-making in order to accommodate far-left influences. And then they don't announce that this is what they're doing and why. They just make the change, and then they treat it as though this is now the new truth. It's just not acceptable, and I think the more we discuss it, the more we can start holding them accountable.
And as you look at, I guess I'll close with this, Alex, because I know you need to run. Breaking the News is the new book, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. As you look at where things are at present, will it course correct? Do you think there's a natural evolution where we change course, or this is what it is and it's just going to be degrees worse and we've got to be more guarded than ever before as consumers?
I wouldn't count on a course correcting in terms of these corporate outlets. I do think we need to be empowering the independent voices. Talk radio has been the best example of this. You look at outlets like Breitbart and independent media. Now we're seeing these podcasts and Substacks and newsletters and some really terrific journalism being done at independent level. But that does need to become its own self-sustaining business model. And I'm worried the incentives won't be there for people to try that route, even though that route can be very lucrative and rewarding for people who really excel at it. But I do think these corporate newsrooms are going to mostly continue to do what they're already doing, but they're going to continue to lose credibility. So they'll be there, they'll be loud, they'll be in your face, and they'll be very irritating. But I think their power will greatly diminish, and I think we're already seeing that.
Alex Marlowe's brand new book, Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. Good luck with the book. I know you won't need it. I'm sure it'll be an explosive bestseller. And available now, yes? Or very soon?
Available now and on the bestseller list already. So thanks to everyone who's a great Father's Day gift. And I think people will really enjoy it and learn a lot. And I really appreciate all the kind words.
Our pleasure. 610-850-0990 is how you reach it. Ed and Jim and Michael, they're all hanging with Dr. Fauci book titles. If you're just joining us and you didn't hear, Dr. Fauci's got a new book coming out this fall. Expect the Unexpected, 10 Lessons on Truth, Service, and the Way Forward. I think we can do better than that. And for your efforts, a Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer Summertime Prize Pack. T-shirt, hat, and a Watch the Trump Car, Please, commemorative Trump Visits Wildwood button. For the winning submission today, 610-850-0990 on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer.
Everything you need is waiting for you at 990theanswer.com.
I don't know if you're one of our podcast listeners yet. I hope that you are. If you don't listen to the Chris Stegall Show podcasts, I think it will be worth your time. I think you'll enjoy it. I hope you will anyway. Download it wherever fine podcasts are available. Apple, iTunes, if you're there. I hope you'll give it a 5-star review and a written review. Monday's show, the Memorial Day show, we weren't here, but I did do a special Memorial Day podcast. And one of the interviews, incidentally, was an interview with a historian who's written about the Apollo 1 mission, which ultimately failed, as those of you who are historians and space experts know, but a lot of people may not remember or know the story of the Apollo 1 mission, and that never got off the ground because there was a tragedy that ended up killing the astronauts involved in a simulation, basically. But talked with a historian and author of this book on the Apollo 1 mission during Memorial Day and the Memorial Day special, because I hadn't even considered this, and this is something you don't think about. But the men and women who serve in NASA often as pilots and have given their lives, they're often, not always, but most of the time, they come from the military themselves. So, you know, we lost lives of military personnel when testing for Apollo 1. And I hadn't really even considered that as a Memorial Day angle, but it was an interesting discussion. And I weighed it in, just so you know, for you space nuts, and for you, and I don't mean nuts in a pejorative way, I just mean people that are enthusiasts. That would have been a more polite way to say it. For space enthusiasts and you UFO people, that is all over Fox News, incidentally. Just so you know, almost every show on Fox is now talking about UFOs. Almost every show. I'm just saying that's obviously some sort of programming strategy. They have decided that we're now going to start with regular doses of UFO talk. And look, they leave nothing to chance. They're a multi-billion dollar corporation, News Corp. They're highly rated. They're the most highly rated cable news organization available. And they continue to regularly do on all their shows UFO talk. So I don't know what that means. I'm not telling you we're doing it here. I'm just telling you it's real. Ben Domenech was doing that 7 o'clock show last night, and he had Newt on, and this was something I talked about in the Apollo 1 interview on Monday. I'm just telling you this exists on my podcasts if you want to go listen to it from Monday's show. I get into this because Newt, you know, was big on colonizing the moon. That was when Newt ran for president. He said, we've got to hurry up and colonize the moon. And I have to admit, I kind of chuckled about it. And to space people, that's not a joke. They mean it. They're deadly. Newt's a deadly serious person, and he means it. He thinks we are in an arms race to space, and we'd better win it. I don't think about it. I'm not saying it's not important. I'm not laughing at it. I just don't know anything about it. The UFO stuff, here's all I know about that, okay? In an era, and I tweeted this last night, in an era where everyone has a camera in their pocket, why do we not have better footage from anyone, anywhere on the globe of UFOs than this grainy night vision stuff from U.S. aircraft or whatever? There's not one iPhone out there. There's not one HD video out there of a clear, wow, look at that thing. It's always some grainy blob.
Yes.
Why is there not one single clear video where you go, wow, that's a compelling, undoctored, un-nightscoped video of something I can't see? Or I can't make sense of that I've never seen before.
Because that literally cannot be confirmed. And it could be altered and messed with. And, I mean, people are very, very good with video editing these days. So
sure, but
this is what the government's confirmed.
Yeah, but it's not. But it's always explained away because you can't clearly make anything out. Oh, well, that's a flight of birds. Or, oh, that's a weather balloon. Or that's a... And I'm not saying it's real or not real. I'm just saying, why? There's nothing. Nobody goes, hey, I was out at the lake, and this thing came hovering over the lake, and I pulled out my phone. I mean, girls are taking pictures of themselves 50 times an hour. We can't get one cell phone shot of a UFO? Not one?
Maybe there is.
Indeed, Fast Eddie. Anyway, my point is, go to the podcast. I hope you'll download it each and every day. ChrisStigall.com. You can listen to it straight from the website, or you can listen to it wherever podcasts are available. Do subscribe so that you never miss a single episode. They come every day, midday or so, around the lunch hour. All right. Very patiently, people have been waiting to share with us their title for Dr. Fauci's new book. On the line today by show's end, I'm making Fast Eddie the judge here. I got a lot of tweeted suggestions, too, which I'll get to coming up. Dr. Fauci's got a new book coming out in November called Expect the Unexpected, 10 Lessons on Truth, Service, and the Way Forward. I know this audience can come up with a better title than that. So, for the winning title, a Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer Summertime Prize Pack. All right? We put together a shirt, a hat, and a commemorative Watch the Trump Car, Please, Trump Visits Wildwood button from last January. All right? 610-850-0990. Very, very patiently waiting in Northeast Philadelphia. It's Edward to kick it off. Edward, thanks so much for being patient. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Chris, I want to go with Medicine Moneyball.
Oh, Medicine Moneyball. I like that very much, Edward. Thank you. But my opinion doesn't matter. Fast Eddie's going to be the judge and jury here. Edward, thank you. That's a good one. Medicine Moneyball. Jim's in Jenkintown. What do you say, Jim? Thanks for your patience. Hi.
Hi, how you doing? I took my inspiration from an old Peter Sellers movie, Doctor Strange Knows, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Vaccine.
How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Vaccine, or Doctor Strange Knows, or Doctor Strange Voice, I would also accept. Again, I can't wait for the audio version, the audiobook version. When we get the copy in November, perhaps we might have to do an audio version. Where I just read a little Dr. Fauci in Dr. Fauci's voice. In Springfield, it's Michael. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Chris. COVID, you dumb bastard.
COVID, pandemic, COVID. You know why? They're trying to talk everybody out of voting. People aren't buying it, CNN, you dumb bastards. They're not buying it.
Inspired by Trump. That would be my personal favorite. If I ever write a book about this era, that's what I would call it. COVID. They're not buying it, you dumb bastard. Thanks, Michael. Vicky's in Mays Landing. Vicky, you have a title?
Hi. Boy, that's hard to follow. How about Fauci Unmasked, Funding, Fraud, and Gain of Function?
Funding, Fraud, and Gain of Function. That's pretty strong. Funding, Fraud, and Gain of Function. Incidentally, the Senate passed a full ban on that last week. Rand Paul.
Yeah, gain of function is basically when you have an animal virus that normally just infects animals and you somehow mutate it or force it to evolve so it can infect humans. So it's making it more transmissible to humans and oftentimes making it more dangerous or deadly in humans. I'll give you an example. In 2004, there was a virus, a coronavirus called SARS. It killed a bunch of people. It had a 15% mortality. In the Wuhan lab, they were studying this SARS virus, and they were putting new proteins on it to make it more infectious into humans. That's gain of function. That's dangerous. And that may be how this virus started.
So that's Dr. Rand Paul talking about gain of function. I like that, Vicky. Funding fraud and gain of function. 610-850-0990 if you have a better title for Dr. Fauci's new book, Expect the Unexpected. In Collingdale, it's Thomas. Hey, Thomas. Glad you called.
Oh, good morning.
Morning,
Chris. And, yeah, my title is Soul of a Nation, Sold to Fauci.
Soul of the Nation sold to Fauci.
Yeah, and like instead of saying, you know, Fauci, just put the word Faust with an S-T in there.
I like it. I like it. Thank you, Thomas. 610-850-0990. Let's go to Lancaster. Ask Dave about it. Dave, you have a book title for Dr. Fauci?
I sure do, Chris. I'm going with a classic of Masks and Men.
Oh, boy. If I were judging, that's a strong one. Of Masks and Men. Ooh, I like it. Little classic lit takeoff there. Very well done, Dave. Justin's in Westchester. Justin, good morning.
Good morning. By the way, I love when you guys do these game shows. They're really fun. But I wanted to say the title of the book should be Lose Your Smell with the Bats from Hell.
Little rhyme. Lose Your Smell with the Bat from Hell. Pretty good. Let's go to Bryn Mawr. Talk to Gerard about it. Gerard, a Fauci book title. Good morning.
Good morning.
What you like?
How to make billionaires. How to make billionaires in 1 year.
No, you're not kidding. How to make billionaires in 1 year. Did you hear the money those people are making out there, Gerard?
Yeah, it is. There's been billionaires made.
Oh, my gosh. I saw that last night. I don't remember where. Somebody did a report on the billionaires tied to the big pharma that have been just cashing in since these vaccines. And I'm not even suggesting they shouldn't. Just saying it's interesting who made all the money out there. Let's go to Leslie next. Hey, Leslie, your idea?
Maskaholics Anonymous, 10 Steps to a More Subservient Life.
I like that. Good stuff. How about Paul in South Philly? Hey, Paul.
Hi. I would say manipulation of the masses through media misinformation mixed with half-truths.
Give me that one more time.
Okay. Manipulation of the masses through media misinformation mixed with half-truths.
I like it. You had the M working through nearly that whole thing. That was strong. Thank you, Paul. Susan's in Broomall. Boy, you're going to be busy in there, Eddie, trying to figure out by the end of the show which one's the best. Susan's in Broomall. Susan, good morning.
Good morning, Chris.
You have an idea?
Anecdotally yours, Dr. Fauci.
Oh, anecdotally. He'd love to say anecdotally. Anecdotally yours, Dr. Fauci. See, I just knew. We're not done yet. 610-850-0990. Let's take a break here. 610-850-0990. If you come up with a good one, name Dr. Fauci's book. We will give you a Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer summertime prize pack. I don't envy Fast Eddie. It's why I put it on him to pick the winner.
We'll just do one.
Keeps the host from being a bad guy. That's smart. It's just good hosting. Twitter submissions this morning, too. Rich said Fauci, I've got a Fauci titled "The Higher Loyalty, Masks, Lies, and Hypocrisy," forward by James Comey. Six one zero 850-0990. By the way, just a little something for the mask crowd out there, the pro-mask crowd. Did you see one of the emails uncovered from the good Dr. Fauci, who's got his brand new memoir coming out in November? They have BuzzFeed, I think it was BuzzFeed and the New York Times, I don't remember exactly who, has done a Freedom of Information Act request on Fauci's emails. First of all, one of the first things about it, all the private correspondence that he had related to Trump, and everybody very worried about dear Dr. Fauci and the mean, awful, ogre Trump. And is Trump keeping you from talking? Is Trump keeping you from telling the truth? Are you under duress? You know, blink twice for help if Dr. Fauci is somehow being endangered by Trump. Let us know, Fauci, say all these emails. And Fauci repeatedly, time and again, says, no, I'm under no pressure whatsoever. I can speak freely whatever I want. Fauci never once, and he, by the way, has confirmed it here, never one time did Fauci ever suggest that he wasn't free to speak and say whatever he wanted and that he had nothing but a completely professional and, in fact, deferential relationship from Trump. Trump, he said on this show, we have the recording, he said, never has there been a time that we've recommended something to Trump that Trump didn't do. Those are the words he said to me. And in fact, that probably today, for a lot of us, I'll say for myself, that's actually a little frustrating. I mean, you know, that was one of the things that Grandpa was never called on during the debates. When Grandpa would regularly say during the campaign of 2020, you know, what would you do differently than Trump with COVID? You remember what Grandpa used to say? Well, I'd do whatever Dr. Fauci told me to do. Oh, well, that's leadership. I do whatever Dr. Fauci, one little pipsqueak bureaucrat that's been around since the AIDS crisis under Ronald Reagan. And by the way, that's still not been solved. One little pipsqueak bureaucrat, your answer to what would you do differently in leadership than President Trump is, I'd do whatever Fauci tells me to do. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, by all accounts, Trump did everything Fauci told him to do. And how did that work out? The left loves to scream and yell that Trump didn't act fast enough, he didn't do enough. Well, he listened to Fauci, exclusively Fauci, and the scarf queen of that time. Remember Dr. Deborah Birx. Those two ran everything. They were in total command. And Trump, I think, against his instincts and against his better judgment, was told, you don't want to kill all these people. You better shut down the economy. And he was like, that's my calling card to a second term. Shut down the economy? What are you talking about? And Fauci, oh, yeah, you got to shut down the economy. It's the only way. And so they did. And I guess history will be the judge as to whether or not that that was smart. But one of the emails that came out of this treasure trove of emails from the esteemed Dr. Fauci was his admission that masks were garbage. Remember that Dr. Fauci did once, in fact, say that masks wouldn't work and there was no point in even wearing them. It's now documented in email form. To someone named Sylvia Burwell, Dr. Fauci sent an email Wednesday, the 5th of November, 2020, and it reads as follows. Sylvia, masks are really for infected people to prevent them from spreading infection to people who are not infected rather than protecting uninfected people. Good Lord, even his emails read like he talks. Masks are not really for infected people to prevent them from spreading infection to people who are not infected rather than protecting uninfected people from acquiring infection. Which is not to say all the time, anecdotally, that sometimes people who might be infected could maybe later be infected. Could you just say something straight? The guy can't speak or write straight. This book, can you imagine his book when it comes out in November, how it's going to... Your head's going to explode getting through one chapter. I know what I said in the first sentence of this chapter now sounds completely different than the last sentence in this same chapter, but that's not to say that the things in between the first sentence and the last sentence are You have to read them. That's not entirely true. What I meant to say was, you've taken it out of context. That's anecdotally. That I do tend to agree. Anecdotally should be a part of the title. Who would somebody suggested anecdotally a little while ago, didn't they? I forget who. 610-850-0990. But yeah, the point is, a typical mask you buy at the drugstore is not really effective to keep out the virus, says Fauci's email. And the box says so. These stupid masks that everybody's made you wear when you walk into the office, that's what the box says. Have you ever read it? It's literally on the box. I hope you're not wearing this thing to protect yourself from a virus, because they don't work that way. Oh. His memoir is coming out in November. All right, 610-850-0990. Have you got a title for it? On the line is a prize pack, a summertime prize pack from Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. We got a T-shirt. We got a hat. We've got a Watch the Trump Car, Please, Wildwood visit to commemorate Trump's visit back in January of 2020. Let's go to Gibbstown to kick it off with Greg. Greg, what do you like? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Chris. I figure this one kind of go along with your Dr. Seuss shirt. Dr. Seuss is better than Dr. Fauci.
Yes.
Or more Dr. Seuss. Oh, the places you'll lie. You'll lie on this show. You'll lie on that show. You'll lie here. You'll lie there. You'll lie everywhere.
Oh, the places you'll lie. You'll lie on this show. You'll lie on that show. That's a good one. I like that. Oh, the places you'll lie. Thank you, Greg. 610-850-0990. Looking for the best Dr. Fauci book title. This one's not going to do. Expect the Unexpected, 10 Lessons on Truth, Service, and the Way Forward. Mark in Philly, have you got a better one?
I do. Good morning. I'm going to try my best Fauci impersonation, like being originally from New York. The mask or not the mask? The man, the myth, the mistake.
To mask or not to mask? The man, the myth, the mistake. I love it. We should do a whole segment where everyone talks like Dr. Fauci. We should do the best Dr. Fauci impression contest. That might be something we do down the road when he is but a distant memory and not in our faces every minute of every day. Although, have you noticed he's kind of vacated the scene lately? You're not seeing nearly as much of him since this new revelation about gain-of-function research he was funding surfaced, and Biden announced he's going to start investigating the lab. You notice Dr. Fauci has kind of taken a back seat, not on cable and network TV nearly as much as he used to be.
He used to do all the Sunday shows.
And every day he was on somewhere. Haven't heard hide nor hair of him in the last week at least. Dave's in Westchester. Morning, Dave.
How you doing?
Doing well, my man. Oh, you kind of already started. You got a little Fauci already. There was a little.
Well, my is. I'm sorry, guys.
No, I just, you kind of had a little, there was something there a minute ago. Kind of like I didn't know if that was morning voice or a little raspy. It kind of, I thought you were working on a Fauci impression there. I liked it.
Could be. I have a mask on.
You have a book title?
Yeah, From Fear to Immunity.
From Here to Eternity, I think, was the play. From Fear to Immunity. Strong. I like wordplay. I like that a lot. Not that I'm the judge. Fast Eddie is, so I don't mean to taint the jury pool, but I really like that stuff. Dave, thank you. Anita's an Ambler. Hi, Anita. Hey, Anita. I need a call. I need an answer, Anita. All right, bye, Anita. Sorry. Mike's in Chalfont. Mike, what do you say?
Well, you just put this picture on the cover. Good morning, Chris. And it's simple. Batty.
Batty. B-A-T-T-Y. Batty. And maybe on Batty, if that's the name of the book, you what you do is you put a picture of him throwing that first pitch, right, at the Nationals game last year. For opening day. Gary's in Bucks County. Hi, Gary.
Hey, good morning. Mine is quite possibly maybe, but I can't be certain.
Quite possibly maybe. We can't say for sure. It's maybe, possibly, but Good. Good. Vinny's in Wallingford. Hey, you, Vinny.
Hey. COVID, it's just the flu. No need for masks.
Extra points from me for doing the Fauci impression as you deliver it. I really enjoy that. Hey, Joe in Philadelphia. Good morning, Joe.
Yeah, I've got masquerade.
Ooh, strong mask, M-A-S-K hyphen raid, masquerade, strong. Wordplay, always fun. Thank you, Joe. Kathleen's in Glen Olden. Hey, Kathleen.
Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Fake Fauci's fibs, foibles, and fraud.
Ooh. Fake Fauci's fibs, foibles, and fraud. Strong. Strong. I love it. These are really great. Fast Eddie, I don't envy your decision by the end of today's show. Who's going to win the Fauci book title for the summertime prize pack? All good. Keep them coming. 610-850-0990. We'll announce a winner before show's end. Still to come, Lou Barletta. Lou will be with us. He's running for governor here in the Commonwealth. And Gordon Chang with us at 8:30. His book, The Coming Collapse of China. In terms of authorities on the subject of China, I don't think there's anybody better out there than Gordon. So he'll be with us at 8:30.
Drive home with me, Sebastian Gorka, this afternoon at 3 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Here's Chris DeGaulle.
Nan in Erdenheim, how about a Fauci book title?
Okay, love your show. My title is Let's Call It What It Is. These royalties are my payoff.
John in Douglasville, real quick.
Oh, I'm having a brain fart. I'm sorry. It was a
two-faced liar. I'll do it for you.
You live here. He lives here.
Big fan. I listen every day.
You guys are doing a fantastic job. Thank you very much, Chris.
Hi, Chris. A huge fan of you and Fast Eddie.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the goal. You know the thing.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 980, The Answer.
Doesn't it feel great when it should be Tuesday, but it's actually Wednesday and middle of the week? Isn't that just a fantastic feeling? How you doing? Thanks for being here. Taking your Fauci book titles this morning. He's got a brand new memoir to be released this fall. Expect the Unexpected, 10 Lessons on Truth, Service, and the Way Forward. All morning long, we're jotting down your submissions for a better book title, and you've really stepped up so far, as I knew you would. We've got one final hour or so to take those submissions, and then we will select, well, I don't, not we, Fast Eddie will select the winning book title, and that's going to be tough because you brought it again, as this audience always does. You brought the heat again, and so we'll land on one, and the winning book title submission gets a Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer prize pack for summer. The hat, the T-shirt, and a commemorative Watch the Trump Car, Please. Trump Visits Wildwood button to commemorate that visit back in January 2020. One of the hottest commodities around here. We always keep a few to throw out there for just such an occasion. All right, telephone number 610-850-0990. Well, you know this next gentleman well. You have known him as the mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. You've known him as a congressman. He's been a guest of mine over the years quite a bit. He ran for Senate a cycle or so ago. And now he's decided he would like to run for governor of Pennsylvania. And I tell you something, if he's successful, well, quite frankly, I don't mean to discount Lou's work here, but I'm just saying, given what we're up against right now with this governor, ideologically speaking, whoever the Republican is, you know, I try not to weigh in on primary races, but whoever the Republican is, you've got to believe he or she is going to be demonstrably better in every way. Lou Barletta certainly would be, and joins us now. Lou, thanks for coming on this morning. I appreciate it. Hi.
Hi, Chris. Good to be with you again.
Yeah, likewise. I was thrilled to hear this because I know you have a platform and a name ID across Pennsylvania that's well-known and well-established, so I think you're going to bring a lot of attention to the conversation right away, which is critically important. And I'll start with that. What is your fundamental difference with a guy like Tom Wolf? Why do you want the job, and how would you change course?
Well, because I think most of us can agree that Pennsylvania is going in the wrong direction, and right now it's being run by under a dictatorship where the governor is picking and choosing winners and losers, what businesses can open, what businesses can close. His mismanagement of Pennsylvania's COVID response really was what prompted me to begin thinking seriously about running for governor. And at the end of months of deciding, Chris, I had 14 good reasons to run, and that's 4 daughters and 10 grandchildren.
Wow.
I want Pennsylvania to be a better state for them to live in than what we're seeing right now. We saw what's happened to our education. Kids had a year stolen from them. We don't know what the long-term effects of that will be. We saw our seniors... from nursing homes, and Governor Wolf put COVID positive patients in those nursing homes, and that percentage is higher than Cuomo in New York, Whitmer in Michigan, Murphy in New Jersey, and Attorney General Josh Shapiro watched where was the investigation of what's happened there. You could go to Walmart to buy a bike, but you can't go into your local bike shop that you've been doing business with. So I just couldn't sit on the sidelines and watch this any longer.
Lou Barletta with us, running for governor here in Pennsylvania, wants to be the Republican nominee to take on who we presume will be Josh Shapiro. I think conventional wisdom holds that that's going to be the nominee for the Democrats. And I wonder, as you stare down the barrel of that prospect, running against a guy who's well-known and well-funded and well-thought of amongst Democrats and has clearly been auditioning for the role for a while nationally as the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, do you consider what you'd be up against in debates with him and contrasting campaigns with him?
Well, what changes, Chris? Whether it's Governor Wolf or Josh Shapiro or any other Democrat, what changes? The ideology of the Democrat Party has been to move to the far left. And if you care about election integrity in Pennsylvania, Governor Wolf or Josh Shapiro is not the answer. What's going to change in our elections, if he's elected? Nothing. People are going to continue to lose confidence, and good candidates are going to refuse to run, and Pennsylvania is going to continue to go down this road where people don't trust the election process, and we have a governor that believes they're a dictator and not a public servant.
Lou, the issue of election integrity is one very well, having been a surrogate of President Trump's and working hard to see him win Pennsylvania a second time. He wasn't ultimately successful, though there are a lot of Pennsylvanians, and count me as one of them, that have real misgivings about what went down in this state in November 2020. And whether you want to call it fraud or whether you want to call it clear violations of the Constitution, I know people are split on that. Some people are really committed to the idea that there was massive, massive, massive wide-scale fraud. Whether or not that's true, I think what's undeniably true is you had a Supreme Court and a governor and a Secretary of State who went well beyond their bounds constitutionally to change election law. That's the legislature's role. So this is something that as Pennsylvanians we feel really unsettled about, and we still don't see a resolution on. And so I got a lot of this is long-winded wind-up, Lou, to say there are a lot of people listening to me right now who just don't have faith that someone like you or any Republican running statewide can ever win an election again unless we fix it. What would you say to them?
Well, I was one that had to consider that. Could you possibly win if we continue to allow, what's going on? No voter ID, no signature matching. Chain of custody gone. Chris, people, dead people. We know this. Have been voting in Pennsylvania for a long time. Dead people have been voting. We know that. Now they don't even have to leave the cemetery. They can mail in their ballots right from the cemetery. I mean, this has got to stop. And the only way that's going to happen is with a Republican governor in 2022. We should not have even had Act 77. I mean, this anyone who brought us Act 77, and that's the mail-in ballots, I don't know how they could be the answer to the problem, because this is what we're dealing with, and how do we fix this going forward? The bar shouldn't be higher if you go to the poll to vote, where people can see you, you match your signature, they know who you are. But now you can just mail in your ballot. You don't need a signature, and they change the rules as they go. And where was Josh Shapiro when all this was happening? If you make him or any other Democrat a governor, do we actually think that anything changes with our elections?
You know, Lou, not to be a rearview mirror looker here, but I, when I moved to Pennsylvania back in late 2010, Tom Corbett was a newly elected Republican governor with a Republican legislature. And when I think to myself now, here in 2021, that we had a Republican governor and a fully controlled Republican legislature, and I look at what, for instance, Ron DeSantis is doing in Florida right now, I think Pennsylvania could have been doing what DeSantis was doing 10 years ago. Could have, if the person in charge had the right vision. Does Lou Barletta see that opportunity?
I served with Ron. We played on a congressional baseball team together. He's a good baseball player, too, believe it or not, as well as a great governor. And I get jealous every time I turn the TV on and I see Ron doing something else, and I think, that's what we're going to do here. That's what I want to do here. Those are the things that are going to bring Pennsylvania back, a strong leader, someone who's not afraid, someone who's been tested. You know, Chris, my time as mayor has been one of many lessons learned, and the greatest lesson I learned as mayor is don't expect somebody else to do something for you. Do it yourself if you want to make the change. And I think that's where we're at in Pennsylvania, where if we want those kind of things that we see in Florida or in Texas or in South Carolina, then you have to elect someone who has the courage, the backbone, and the strength to stand up, because there'll be a lot of pressure, you know, when you want to change things like that. And I don't think this is a time for somebody to audition for the top job.
Can you, and I want to double down on the question I asked you a couple ago, can you win statewide given the satellite election offices, the drop boxes, the chain of custody problems that hasn't been fixed? And quite frankly, I don't know what the Republican legislature is going to be able to accomplish before your election, should you be the nominee running against Josh Shapiro, presumably. I don't know what they'll be able to fix. So given that maybe everything stays exactly the same as November 2020, can you win statewide?
Well, I think I can. Being that I ran in 2018, so I have statewide name ID, and we won 53 counties, so people know who I am. My relationships over the past 2 years with the building trades in Philadelphia and in Pittsburgh, I think is a big difference. And they're not going to be able to do all that they did in the 2020 election under the umbrella of COVID, and that was allow more ballots to come in after election. I think there'll be a lot more attention onto the ballot harvesting. So I do think there are things that are going to change, but I don't know if there's ever been an issue that will drive more Republicans to the polls than realizing this may be our last chance to fix the election process in Pennsylvania. You know, if you have a Republican governor, those changes will be made. If we sit home, I think there'll be dark days for Republicans going forward statewide.
Yeah, there are only two issues in my view. You may disagree, and I'm not running, so you can obviously disagree because you're putting your money and reputation on the line, and I'm not. I'm just a talk show host. But in my view, if you're going to crisscross the Commonwealth and talk to people about voting for you, in my view, you talk about election integrity and you talk about COVID. And you can talk about them in either order because I think they're equally important and they've both equally been devastating to the citizens of the Commonwealth. And Josh Shapiro stands with the November election, and he stands with the lockdowns of the last year. And I think it's indefensible. So it seems like a slam dunk issue, those two, to ram home. Were it me, that's my opinion. Yours?
No, I agree totally. I mean, that's really what prompted me to decide to run, because, you know, we watched what happened, you know, where businesses were literally shut down, where you know, the governor picked and chose which ones had to shut down, which ones could open. We watched what happened in our nursing homes. We watched, you know, our kids in education. You know, Chris, in Hazleton, there's 12,000 students in Hazleton Area School District. 4,000 of those students have been lost, and what lost I mean is they don't know where they are. They stopped going online. They didn't have proper emails. They moved. They just vanished. I mean, this is tragic, what's happened to our children, and it shouldn't be overlooked that you know, Governor Wolf, Josh Shapiro, all the bureaucrats in Harrisburg allowed this to happen. Some of these businesses, I was a small business owner, some of these businesses will never open again. And it's not only the business owners, it's those employees, you know, that lost their jobs and their livelihoods. And we can't sit back. I couldn't sit back and watch this any longer. It's the reason I'm running and the election integrity. Sure, I can sit out and say, listen, I have no chance. We have no chance of winning. They're just going to cheat. But then we're giving up.
Yeah.
And if we give up on this next election, Chris, then we're going to deserve what we get. So I think I give us the best chance to win, running statewide already. People know who I am. Got over 2 million votes. And I think I have the resume in the background to do the job at a time that it needs to be done.
How can people help Lou if they'd like to get involved with your campaign or do more somehow?
Sure. They can go on loubarletta.com. You know, obviously it's going to be an expensive election, and we're going to need all the help we can, especially if it's Josh Shapiro, which it appears it will be. So we're going to need all the help to make sure that we have a great campaign. I have a fantastic team. Things are going to be, I think there's going to be a noticeable difference in how we go about things. And it's that important that we change the direction of Pennsylvania, and it happens in next year's election.
Lou Barletta, running for governor on the Republican side in the primary. He'll be on your ballot. So, Lou, thanks. You're welcome back anytime. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Chris. Always good to talk to you.
816, telephone number 610-850-0990, taking your Fauci book titles for the Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer summertime prize pack as well, 610-850-0990. COVID, lockdowns, and election integrity. Anything else to talk about if you're running for governor in this coming cycle? Anything else? I don't want to talk about anything else. I literally don't. Don't talk to me about fracking. Don't talk to me about even the economy. It matters, but I don't want to talk about either of those things. Don't talk to me about any of it. I want to talk about COVID lockdowns, and I want to talk about election integrity. That's all that matters to Republican voters right now. Period. Full stop. This is Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. Gordon Chang is on the way this morning, 820. Telephone number 610-850-0990. I don't want to pick on this woman, Molly Eichel. I like Molly Eichel. Molly has been a guest of my show over the years. She's now the breaking news editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer. So I don't want to give her too tough a time. She's a perfectly lovely lady. But she's written a piece today, an opinion piece at the Inquirer. I should be happy. Regular COVID-19 briefings are ending, but this return to normalcy is bittersweet. And in this piece, she talks about Armando Hasbun, who will get a special citation from the Toilet Czar, Mayor Kenny, today, celebrating Immigrant Heritage Month. Armando was the Spanish language translator during the COVID-19 briefings. I guess he was also a LaSalle professor. And so Molly writes about honoring him for keeping Philly's Spanish-speaking communities informed, and for her, overseeing live coverage of the coronavirus required constant updates on changing safety regulations, case trends, and more. These regular TV briefings were must-see. She goes on to talk about Governor Murphy over in New Jersey and Judy, his state health commissioner, the woman who needs no introduction. And Molly goes on to write about Dr. Rachel Levine and how Molly will miss Dr. Levine's pashminas and scarves. Molly says she's sure she's not the only one who found comfort in the chaos, the joy and the inanity throughout the pandemic. And then there's this. My therapist told me at one point that she tells patients to turn off the news when it's becoming too overwhelming, and we both laughed because I can't just turn off my job. So it's the Armandos and the Judys and the debate over decorative neckwear that made it all feel manageable. These people gave my work-from-home life structure and helped create bonds with my colleagues, even if we were miles away from each other. No matter how COVID case counts were trending, at least Judy still needed no introduction. I know that ultimately this end of a terrible era is a good thing. It means we're turning a corner. That as the press, we can focus at least part of our attention elsewhere. But still, Armando wasn't there at that last press briefing, and I felt an unearned sense of melancholy when I should have been feeling hope. I didn't even get to say goodbye.
Your friend sounds crazy, Chris.
Well, she's not a friend. She's a professional acquaintance. She's not a friend, but that's Molly Eichel, the breaking news editor at The Inquirer, who's struggling with saying goodbye to all of these people that she's loved to watch and hung on their every word, giving her a feeling of hope and unity and camaraderie. And Dr. Levine, the therapist, said it's time to let go of Cousin It. Molly is struggling to let go of Cousin It's neckwear and...
Good times.
That's what we've been up against out there. All right, let's name Dr. Fauci's book quickly before some traffic and Gordon Chang. Sean is in Queens. Hey, Sean, good morning.
What's going on, fellas? Great show as always. That's why we listen. I got one.
Yes, sir.
I'm a liar, but I've always been a liar anecdotally.
Anecdotally. I'm a liar, but I've always been one anecdotally. Dr. Fauci book titles. He's got a new one coming out in November. The expected title is Expect the Unexpected, 10 Lessons on Truth, Service, and the Way Forward. We really felt we could do better. We'll run down the list of some that have been submitted throughout the course of the morning. If you've got one, the winning book title will get a prize pack. 610-850-0990. Hey, Chris and Booth Wynn, what do you say?
Good morning. Hey, I just want to say that little story about the Inquirer member there just shows that liberalism is a mental disorder. But my book title is Figures Lie and Liars Figures, The Chronicling of Fauci's Falsehoods.
That's a good one. The Chronicling of Fauci's Falsehoods. Figures Lie and Liars Figure. I like it. Steve's in the Northeast, I think. No, not. Do we have him? No? Try that. Yeah. No, gone. All right. 610-850-0990. Keep them coming. Quick break here for traffic. Gordon Chang just around the corner. Yeah, I'll read through some tweets as well. I got a lot of Twitter submissions today on Fauci book titles. I'll blow through some of those after we talk to Gordon.
We are Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer, because the truth never goes out of style.
Yeah, gain of function is basically when you have an animal virus that normally just infects animals and you somehow mutate it or force it to evolve so it can infect humans. So it's making it more transmissible to humans and oftentimes making it more dangerous or deadly in humans. I'll give you an example. In 2004, there was a virus, a coronavirus called SARS. It killed a bunch of people. It had a 15% mortality. In the Wuhan lab, they were studying this SARS virus, and they were putting new proteins on it to make it more infectious into humans. That's gain of function. That's dangerous.
Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton. Senator, it's good to see you. As we pointed out at the top of this hour, you were one of those people who was dismissed as a tinfoil hat-wearing conspiracy theorist for even entertaining the idea that this thing emanated from a lab. And I'm wondering, have you been sending recipes to your detractors for how to cook crow?
No, John. What's most important here is that we get to the bottom of what happened and that we hold China accountable for what happened. Now, look, I'm glad that Joe Biden is finally willing to look at the evidence and just use his common sense. But what he announced yesterday is too little and too late. It's only kicking the can down the road, trying to avoid conflict and controversy with China.
Tom Cotton, Rand Paul, two senators from the very beginning who were loud and vociferous in their protestations about China, in their declarations that China was involved. Rand Paul, the only guy that consistently held people like Dr. Fauci's feet to the fire throughout this discussion about what was going on in this lab and our role, our taxpayer-funded role with it, and the World Health Organization. And what's caused the change all of a sudden politically for Biden to acknowledge and cable news to acknowledge something they wouldn't a year ago that made you a xenophobe a year ago, but now everyone's willing to talk about, well, maybe it was the lab. Here to talk about it. It's been a while since we've asked him to weigh in, and we're so grateful that he's back with us. Gordon Chang, author of The Coming Collapse of China. He's Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. I hope you follow him. Gordon, welcome back to the show, sir. Good morning.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Chris.
Gordon, I know we talked throughout the course of the last year often about China and China's role. I don't think you ever had any doubt that this originated from China. I don't think there was any doubt about it in geographic terms, but it's the how in China that there was a big doubt. So what's your read on it now?
Well, in all probability, this was an escape of an engineered pathogen from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. We don't have that 100%, but the evidence indicates that's the case. Because, first of all, there was those three researchers who fell ill in November 2019. They were hospitalized with COVID-like symptoms. The following month, the wife of a researcher at the institute, she fell ill with such symptoms, and she actually died. There was, for instance, no cell phone calls from the Wuhan Institute in October for a period of about 10 days, indicating something happened there. So, you know, we start putting all this together. The other thing is that a lot of scientists like this idea of a natural mutation, but no one's been able to find the reservoir for the pathogen, and no one's been able to document the transmission links from bat to intermediary mammal to human.
Gordon, what do you make of Dr. Fauci, ultimately, these emails that have just been uncovered in the last day or so that show that he had a lot of interactivity with his counterparts in China, some of them thanking him for his work and kind of trying to deflect the blame from them and apologizing to him for them chiding us and the way we handled it and masks and things like that. How do you read that? Does it bother you? Does that alarm you? Or is that pretty typical, do you think, from a functionary, a bureaucrat in our government to China's?
Yeah, I think the most disturbing email so far is the one between Fauci and Peter Daszak of the Echo Health Alliance.
Yes.
Fauci actually granted money to Echo Health for the purpose of sending it to the Wuhan Institute of Virology for bat coronavirus research. And we know from research papers that were issued that this was gain-of-function experiments that they were using the money for. And we have Peter Daszak actually thanking Fauci in April of last year for deflecting the theory that this was actually an engineered virus. So that was early indication that Fauci was supporting this natural mutation theory. And we have actually Peter Daszak himself had admitted, he actually admitted this in print, that he was trying to protect his colleagues at the Wuhan Institute by actually telling the American public that this was a natural mutation. So that was pretty close to an indication that he was lying. Then you put all of this together, and this relationship between Fauci's Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, which is part of NIH, and the Echo Health Alliance and the Wuhan Institute of Virology was really unholy.
This Echo Health Alliance you mentioned, this Peter Daszak, he's president of the organization. Are they affiliated with the World Health Organization, or are they an independent organization? What are they exactly? Do you know?
Well, Peter Daszak was actually part of the WHO mission to Wuhan in January and February of this year, which is basically asking the criminal to investigate his own acts. And so the relationship between WHO and Echo Health is really close and is something that the American public needs to look at.
Do you believe ultimately then that Fauci is just a self-interested narcissist and typical bureaucrat, or is it something more nefarious? What's your read on that guy?
I don't believe that he is evil, but I do believe that he is responsible in large measure for the pandemic because he was the one who helped fund this research. He's the one who didn't sound the alarm early, because what he should have said early in this epidemic is that there's a real possibility that this is an engineered pathogen, but he didn't do that. So he wasted incredibly important time. You know, a lot of people criticize the Trump administration for a slow response to the coronavirus. There are a lot of reasons for that. One of them is that China actually lied and tried to lull public health officials into not taking precautions. But the other is that our own officials were not sounding the alarm when they knew that there was a real possibility of a lab leak, that this was an engineered pathogen. So that's where Fauci's responsibility is, and he needs to be held accountable for that. He shouldn't be working at NIH anymore.
And interestingly, he would say things back then that were true, and he knew to be true, like masks are kind of silly, largely. They don't work unless, you know, if you're infected, you know, fine. But, you know, wearing them around to try to keep from being infected is really kind of pointless. He wrote it in an email. And then, of course, he flipped on that ultimately and said it was something about trying to protect supply at the time. But now everybody should wear them. And he just, at best, he comes off as a political figure that's just kind of blowing in the wind with whatever the sentiment is that benefits him and his allies politically.
Yeah, you put your finger on something very important, Chris, and that is, yeah, people do change their mind. But it does not appear that Fauci changed his mind because he actually changed his mind. As you say, he was a figure that was changing in the political winds, which was influencing a medical judgment, a scientific judgment that he should have been making. So I think that, you know, what we know so far about masks and Fauci's position just indicates that he was saying what he thought was politically expedient. So as I said, I don't mind people changing their mind, but they have to change their mind for the right reasons. Fauci, from all that we know, changed it for the wrong reasons.
Gordon Chang is the author of The Coming Collapse of China, Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. As for China, we have a remarkably different approach now with this current administration under Joe Biden than we did with Donald Trump. And you have to wonder, why suddenly Biden appears to look like he wants to investigate China when before it was outright racist to even suggest it. I mean, China was priority number one for Donald Trump. There was no doubt about it. And I tend to believe that had the fullness of this been known by the public and the media told the truth about it at the time, it would have been advantage Trump big time, and they knew it. And so it was useful to try to make people think they were, you know, crazy for blaming China, when in fact now that's exactly where we've arrived a year later.
Yes. Well, the one thing about Biden which is really troubling, Chris, is that he has shown no interest in where this disease came from. Remember, he had a two-hour phone call with Chinese leader Xi Jinping in February, and Biden admitted he didn't raise the issue. The only reason why he issued that executive order on the on last Wednesday, May 26, was because he was forced politically to do so. Remember, in the morning, CNN reported that the State Department spiked an investigation into the origins of COVID-19. That caused an uproar in the following hours, and that's only when that occurred did Biden then issue this order about a 90-day investigation, which, by the way, we don't need a 90-day investigation from a politically compromised intelligence community that's gotten it wrong from China on China for decades. What we need is for Biden to do something that he has the power to do immediately, and that is to declassify intelligence. Let the American people decide. We can figure it out. We're not I don't know what word I should be using here, but we certainly are intelligent enough to do this on our own. Biden should let us do that.
Do you believe we're at a Cold War state with China, like we were once upon a time with Russia? Is this a Cold War we find ourselves in? Because I don't think the left views China that way, but I sure, when you look at their military development, when you see their economic policy, when you see how aggressively they've gone after us over the years and everything from trade to intellectual property, and now, you know, we learn even in this virus that came from them, they controlled much of the flow of PPE and pharmaceuticals, and they hold a tremendous amount of our debt. They're frightening to me, Gordon. I don't know how our leaders in Washington view them, but they frighten me, I won't lie.
Well, they certainly frighten me, because China's challenge to the United States is existential, which means we could lose our country. This is more than just a Cold War. You know, we should maybe put aside labels, but we know that China has this doctrine of unrestricted warfare. Using this doctrine, they deliberately spread this virus beyond its borders. Whatever the origin is, they made this a biological weapon after it had spread around China. And that means we have 595,000 Americans who have succumbed to this disease, the result of a deliberate and malicious act by the Chinese leaders. And so this is more than just a Cold War. This is a struggle. China has, as I said, changed the definition of war. So we're in it, and we have to understand the maliciousness of this, and we have to start defending ourselves, because if we don't start defending ourselves, it's not like we could lose our country. We will lose our country.
It will require a Trump-like policy. If not Trump himself, I know a lot of people are still hopeful that could be the case, but if not Trump himself, a Trump-like posture. Was Trump on the right track, or would you have liked to have seen even more aggression?
Well, Trump was on the right track. Trump was doing all that was politically possible within the America of his time. But we need more, because we have to understand that China's fundamental challenge, and we've got to deal with it. And so far, we're only coming to the realization of what China did, which means we have yet to formulate and come to a consensus on what to do. We can't even get China legislation through the Congress, that bill that was sponsored by Chuck Schumer, to his credit. But he can't get it through Congress because they're fighting over it. That shows you that there is not a sufficient realization in Congress, much less the American public, about what to do. I think actually the American public knows what to do. It's just that our elected representatives can't.
We had Alex Marlowe on the show, Breitbart senior editor-in-chief. His overall thesis is news media in this country is largely influenced, if not outright bought and paid for, by Chinese interests. Do you concur? Is that why we don't get the straight skinny on what's going on with China? There's too much corporate influence and ties monetarily with China?
Absolutely. We know that China's been dumping money into mainstream media. The revelations about Time magazine yesterday are really disturbing, pointing to a failure, complete failure on the editors of that publication. But also, you know, we have seen mainstream media outlets, Washington Post comes to mind, that have been too willing to propagate Chinese narratives when they should have been investigating, which is not to say that they shouldn't report what China's saying. Yes, of course they should, but they've been reporting it as truth, not as what a regime not known for truth is actually saying. So, yeah, there's been a failure of the media because, as you know, you pointed out in the beginning with your clips, you go back even 2 months ago, and this whole idea of a lab leak was completely dismissed when it should have at least been discussed with the respect it deserves.
Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. Gordon Chang is author of The Coming Collapse of China. Final question is their biggest weakness. Where is China's vulnerability, or is there anything about them that's still on their heels? I mean, the title of your book suggested at one point they were on their heels, but right now they seem like they're advancing pretty strongly.
Yeah, the biggest weakness is that the communism is against life, it's against liberty, it's against freedom, it's against the things that people in the world want. And, yeah, they've got a lot of other weaknesses that we can talk about, but fundamentally it's the nature of communism that is the weakness.
Gordon Chang, thank you, sir, very much.
Thank you so much, Chris.
847, telephone number 610-850-0990. Quick break. Final round of Fauci book titles. Fast Eddie combing through them all, trying to pick his favorite. 610-850-0990. You'll get a Philadelphia's AM990 The Answer Summertime Prize Pack for the winning Fauci book title submission on Philadelphia's AM990 The Answer.
Now, more of Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Yeah, Moderna is seeking FDA emergency approval for the COVID vaccine ages 12 to 17. Yeah, I can't wait to take my kids to get an emergency injection with something that has not been approved by the FDA. What could possibly go wrong? Well, you're just not a thinking person if you don't pump the brakes a little bit. I can't imagine people racing their children to get a shot in the arm at 12. You know, my daughter's 12. She's turning 13 in August. And she's got a lot of her little girlfriends are just as enthused. And sure, their parents have told them they're going to go get that shot. Just can't wait. And she kind of anticipated that that was going to be our stand, too, that we're going to run her right out there to get the shot. I said, we're not going to. No, we're not. And I think she was a little taken aback that we weren't going to go stand in line with the rest of her friends to get the shot. I said, we're not. No, we're not. And I said, I would strongly encourage you to just tell anybody that asks. First of all, it's none of their business. But if you really feel you must, then tell them that you did. Lie. The only time in my life that I've actually encouraged my children to lie if asked about the shot. I do. I just tell them to lie because that's what mom and dad are doing, lying.
That's what I did over the weekend.
Yeah,
that's
and I encourage everyone to lie and tell everybody it's none of your damn business and shove it squarely up your rectum. You have no right to ask me about my vaccine status, but if you insist on making it a conversation point, then I'll lie to you to appease you, but I'm not. I don't owe you any explanation. So it amazes me that in places like New York, and I'm sure, God forbid, but I'm sure in time, the totalitarian nature of guys like the Toilet Czar here in Philadelphia, he'll probably copy New York because he's got such an erection for New York and New York leadership. I'm sure soon that you'll expect to see cordoned off sections at stadiums for the unvaccinated, you know, like a leper colony. They're doing that in New York, no kidding. Yankees games, I think Knicks games. Anyway, 610-850-0990. The Fauci book title. This has been tough. Fast Eddie has been, we had a lot of submissions there. And they were great. But we'll do one more round of them here, and then we'll land on a winner for the summertime prize pack. Joel in Harleysville, what do you say, Joel? Good morning.
Good morning.
You have a title? Go for it.
Yes, mask, not what your country can do for you.
Mask, not. I like that. Mask, not what your country can do for you. Joe is in Philadelphia. Hi, Joe.
Hey, good morning. Title is The Silent War, How I Conveniently Forgot to Talk About Working in the Wuhan Lab in the 1980s.
you might need a poster board-sized book front, but thank you. Yeah, Joe, good one. Joseph's in Exton. Hi, Joseph.
Good morning, Chris. My title is Mask Up, the Musical.
It's the worst singing ever. Everybody. I can't understand what they're singing. Bill is in Malvern. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Chris. I got a big harum for you. My title is Fauci. It's not the size of the man in the mask. It's the size of the mask on the man.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
If the governor harumph.
You watch your ass.
Yeah. All right. So Fast Eddie's now taking all of these under consideration, and he'll be back to christen a winner soon.
It's Mike Gallagher. Join me this morning at 9 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Now let's get you back to Philadelphia's Morning Answer with the great Chris DeGaulle.
We won't do Twitter submissions only because we kept this caller exclusive, but I did get some great tweets for Fauci book titles as Fast Eddie picks his favorites. Let me see here. Bill says Fauci's book should definitely have a foreword by Andrew Cuomo. Americans are veal. Fauci's revised book title, Lives, Liberties, Happiness, and How to Kill Them. Bro Clem says Fauci's book title, Useful Idiot. Opposing Force says Dr. Fauci, The Art of Hypocrisy, From Failure at AIDS to Failure at Coronavirus to Throwing First Pitches Like a Girl. Barb says, because Fauci is a joke, here's a title, The CCP, the NIH, and the Media Walk into a Lab. I got it. Pursuing Happiness says Fauci book title, Intended Consequences, How I Took Down a President and Destroyed Freedom in America. Oh, that's actually from Bonnie. Okay, thank you, Bonnie. Fauci book title from Ben Bohica, B-O-H-I-C-A. Bend over, here I come again. Philly Chick says, my book title, It's All for Theater. Noontastic says, Dr. Fauci book title, Lord of the Lies. That's strong. Lord of the Lies. Tony Loves China, A Match Made in COVID. Is another one from Keep Claiming. I think I got most of them. They made me do it. Now I'm the scapegoat. All right. Anecdote. Anecdote is a good one. All right, Fast Eddie, that's we got a big bunch to choose from, but you had to land on one. Who do you like?
I did. Edward in Northeast Philly, Medicine Moneyball.
Wow, that was that. You landed on that one early and never moved off it. Nothing swayed you from Medicine Moneyball.
Everybody else's was so good as far as like using on Dr. Seuss and all that stuff. It was all really good. I also like COVID, you dumb bastards.
Yeah, that was good. All right, Medicine Moneyball with an honorable mention for
COVID, pandemic, COVID.
See you tomorrow.
This is WNTP, Philadelphia's AM 990. The Answer, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM.